holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful, with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen. I was looking for gifts for my parents, who are notoriously hard to shop for, and when I looked at gifts tagged as for grandparents, I ended up finding a bunch I actually want to buy for my husband, who basically has the sensibility of a grandpa. There's a History by Mail subscription where you get a new replica of a historical document delivered each month, interactive coffee mugs with QR codes that you can scan for a new historical fact or piece of trivia every day, and a blueprint of his favorite baseball stadium. So I'm still looking for something for my parents, but in the meantime, I was able to cross at least one name off my list. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/psych. That's uncommongoods.com/psych for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This episode of Food Psych is brought to you by my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course. If you're interested in exploring how intuitive eating can help in recovery from the full spectrum of disordered eating and eating disorders, check out my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course. It'll help you start untangling your self-worth from your eating and your weight so that you can start feeling freer and more at peace with food and your body. Just go to christyharrison.com/minicourse to get it. That's christyharrison.com/minicourse. Welcome to Food Psych, a podcast dedicated to critiquing diet and wellness culture and answering your questions about intuitive eating and the anti-diet approach. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and I'm a registered dietitian, certified intuitive eating counselor, journalist, and author of the books Anti-Diet, which is available now wherever books are sold, and The Wellness Trap, which will be out in early 2023. And by the way, on this show, I avoid saying diet culture stuff like weight and calorie numbers, but we don't censor swear words or other adult language, so listener discretion is advised. Hey there, welcome to this episode of Food Psych. I'm your host, Christy Harrison, and today I'm going to be answering an audience question about what disordered thoughts mean about your recovery. This is a really important topic because for most people, the process of healing from disordered eating or eating disorders is messy, and it involves a long middle phase of being not as disordered as you were before, but also definitely still struggling and still thinking disordered thoughts, even if you're not acting on them. And as this question reveals, there are articles floating around online that frame recovery in really black and white ways that ultimately aren't super helpful for true healing. So not only will we unpack that, but we'll talk a little bit about the role of social media and other algorithmic technologies in amplifying and incentivizing stark messages that are really lacking in nuance, and how you might respond when you come across those messages. But before we get into all that, just a couple of quick announcements. This episode is brought to you by my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course. If you're interested in exploring how intuitive eating can help in healing from the full spectrum of disordered eating and eating disorders, come check out my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course. It'll help you start untangling your self-worth from your eating and your weight so that you can start feeling freer and more at peace with food and your body. You'll learn what intuitive eating is and why it's linked to better outcomes than dieting, some of the most common myths and misconceptions about intuitive eating, the 10 principles of intuitive eating and how to begin applying them in your life and/or with your clients if you're a provider, common barriers to intuitive eating and ways to address them, how to use intuitive eating principles in eating disorder recovery, and which principles you might want to set aside until the later stages, and so much more. Just go to christyharrison.com/minicourse to learn more and sign up now. That's christyharrison.com/minicourse. Now, without any further ado, let's get into this week's question. It's from a listener named Michelle who writes, "Hi, I just read your book and it was life-changing for me. I've battled with a restrictive eating disorder for the past 6+ years, and I still struggle with restriction now, even though it would be considered atypical since I'm no longer thin. I've deemed myself to be in quasi-recovery because although I have come a long way, I still struggle so much with diet culture and disordered eating. I was reading an article recently, and it stated that, quote, if you still have constant eating disorder thoughts, you still have an eating disorder, even if you are not doing the actions, end quote. Is this true? I have eating disorder thoughts daily, and I've realized that I have found quirky ways to disguise my restriction, so much so that I didn't even fully realize that I was doing it. Now I feel deeply insecure about my recovery and if I will ever fully move past this stage in my life, especially since I'm now fat and know that my habits will never result in the thinness I so desperately want. Am I still deeply in my eating disorder, or would this be considered quasi-recovery or even as good as a recovery as I'll ever get? So thanks, Michelle, for that great question. And before I answer, I'll just give my usual disclaimer that these answers and this podcast in general are for informational and educational purposes only, aren't a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice, and don't constitute a provider-patient relationship. Also, this is just my take as one dietitian and journalist, and I hope you'll seek out other perspectives and consult your own inner compass as well. So first, I want to send you so much compassion for everything you've gone through in your relationship with food and your body, because it sounds like you've really come a long way in your recovery and you've been through a lot, but you also know that you still have much farther to go in your healing, and it can be really hard having to hold those conflicting thoughts. In my experience, though, I think framing it that way is much more helpful than looking at it in stark terms like, quote, if you still have constant eating disorder thoughts, you still have an eating disorder. Of course, I don't know the full context here, right? And maybe the article as a whole was more nuanced than that one sentence. But just going by what you shared, I think that's a pretty black and white take on recovery. And it sounds like it wasn't especially helpful to you. So really, that black and white view, I think, minimizes all the progress you've made. And it also flattens the complexities of this messy in-between phase that you're in. It lumps your current situation together with your past experience when you weren't even trying to fight the restrictive thoughts or resist the behaviors. And those are fundamentally very different points in recovery, right? So if you still have constant eating disorder thoughts, but you're not acting on them or not acting on them as often, that is tremendous growth, right? And yes, of course, you still have work to do on recovery in order to further reduce the disordered behaviors that you might still be doing and decrease the hold that those thoughts have on you, decrease the frequency of the thoughts so they're not intruding in your everyday life. But that doesn't mean you're back at square one or that this is as good as recovery will ever get. Right? The truth is just so much more hopeful and so much more nuanced than that. Also, to me, I think there's a bigger cultural issue at play here than just this one article and how it landed for you. And maybe this will be helpful to consider. Social media and online platforms in general have an unfortunate way of amplifying the most black and white messages and burying more complex ones. This is really by design. So platform algorithms are engineered to promote engagement and keep people liking, clicking, and sharing on the platforms. And guess which kind of content performs best in that setting? It's content that provokes anger and disgust, uses moral emotional language, and/or introduces seemingly novel information. There's some really great research on this that we'll link to in the show notes for this episode. But, you know, on a broad scale, I would say that these aspects of social media and other algorithmic platforms really facilitate the spread of misinformation and conspiracy theories. And at the level of individual content creators, this can make people write and speak in ways that are just a lot more blunt and lacking in nuance, because that's what tends to attract the most likes, comments, and shares. I've had to learn to recognize that in my own writing, in my own work, and trying to push back on that tendency as well, despite the fact that I started my journalism career before social media even existed, because it's really disturbing to see how quickly we're conditioned to play that algorithmic game. So I think in a lot of ways, social media and platform algorithms that, you know, reward engagement have really pushed the discourse in this much more black and white direction, in this much more polarizing direction. And so today when I'm reading online, I often find it helpful to notice how particular messaging affects my mental health and my overall well-being, right? Or even just my mental state that day. And to use that to help decide whether to continue engaging with that source of messaging. So that means noticing any physical sensations that come up when I read or hear a given message and sitting with that. Like, does my heart start racing? Do I break out in a sweat? Does my breathing get shallow? Is there tightness in my chest, jaw, shoulders, or any other body part? What happens to my mental state and where do my thoughts go? Do I feel open, reflective, and maybe even excited to engage with a new idea? Or do I feel triggered or activated and stuck in a loop of repetitive and self-negating thoughts? And then some important follow-up questions you might consider. Could this activated or triggered feeling be a sign that I'm coming up against some of my own internal biases or unhealed places, like disordered eating that is being activated? Or conversely, might it be a sign that some harmful dynamics are afoot and I'd do well to disengage from this source of information? What are my body and brain trying to tell me with these reactions? It often takes time and quiet reflection in order to discern the answers here. It often can take some time away from the platforms too and the source of the information. And I know that's even harder to do when you're struggling with an eating disorder or other mental health issues, because it's hard to just disengage and find that space. So, Michelle, to the extent that it's possible for you, I'd invite you to consider those questions whenever you're reading anything online, whether it's about eating disorder recovery or other topics. And in this case, I'd look at the reaction that you had where you said, now I feel deeply insecure about my recovery and whether I'll ever fully move past this stage in my life, right? That's a pretty extreme reaction. That sounds like it really activated you. And, you know, so I'd invite you to look at that and consider that and try to discern whether that worry is coming from a grounded, wise place in you or whether you got activated by the black and white statement you took from the article. Or maybe there's a little bit of both in there. But if it's mostly coming from that activated place, how might you reground yourself and reconnect with your recovery? Because it sounds like you've already come really far in your recovery and you've developed some tools and skills to cope and navigate diet culture. And so what might help you get back to being able to use those skills? As for your question of whether you're still deeply in your eating disorder or whether this would be considered quasi-recovery, I can't answer that without really knowing you and your individual situation, but I'd invite you to consider whether it might be one of those examples of both and rather than either or, right? You mentioned that you found quirky ways to disguise your restrictions so that you didn't even fully realize you were restricting. And becoming aware of that fact actually sounds like a huge breakthrough, even though it also points to the need for more work on your recovery. So how can you hold both of those things with compassion? How can you hold the fact that you just had a big breakthrough that does signify, you know, an even further level of growth in your recovery, and that that breakthrough has shown a light on areas that you still need to really work on? And then regarding your last question, you say, is this as good as recovery will ever get for me? Now, again, no one can predict the future, so I can't tell you for sure. And these kinds of questions also often strike me as the eating disorder trying to justify itself, because if the answer is yes, you know, this is as good as it ever gets, then the eating disorder could tell you to just give up on recovery because why bother, right? So I'm not going to like engage with the eating disorder on that level, but I just want to say, you know, going by what you've shared here, I'd say it's likely this is not as good as recovery will ever get for you, and that you're going to go much farther and deeper than you ever imagined. And I say that because you're clearly immersing yourself in recovery-oriented content and thinking critically about your eating disorder enough to have breakthroughs about the sneaky ways that it's showing up, that restriction is showing up for you without you having realized it, right? And that's a sign that you're already deepening your recovery, you're already really committed to healing, and that gives me a lot of hope for your future. And so I hope it can do the same for you. Finally, it sounds like you may already be working with an eating disorder treatment team, but if not, then I would definitely prioritize finding one because that's a super important and helpful step in your healing. You can check out my list of providers, which we'll link to in the show notes, for some folks who are versed in eating disorder recovery, as well as intuitive eating and anti-diet approaches to health, many of whom offer sliding scales or scholarships for folks in need as well. So thanks again, Michelle, for that great question, and I hope it helps you think about your recovery with more self-compassion and about online articles in general with more of a critical lens. To submit your own question for a chance to have it answered either here or in my Food Psych Weekly newsletter, go to christyharrison.com/questions. That's christyharrison.com/questions. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. And if you found this podcast helpful, I'd be so grateful if you'd take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can see all the places to do that at christyharrison.com/subscribe. That's christyharrison.com/subscribe. To get full show notes and a transcript of this episode, go to christyharrison.com/287. That's christyharrison.com/287. And to get the transcript, just scroll down to the bottom of the page and enter your email address. This episode was brought to you by my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course. If you're interested in exploring how intuitive eating can help in recovery from the full spectrum of disordered eating and eating disorders, check out my Intro to Intuitive Eating mini course. It'll help you start untangling your self-worth from food and weight so that you can start feeling freer and more at peace with food and your body. Just go to christyharrison.com/mini course to get it. That's christyharrison.com/mini course. A big thanks to our editor and sound engineer, Mike Lalonde, community and content associate, Vinci Chui, and administrative assistant, Julianne Watasek, for helping me out with all the moving parts that go into producing this show each week. Our album art was photographed by Abby Moore Photography, and the logo was designed by Melissa Alam. Our theme song was written and performed by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, and I'm your host and producer, Christy Harrison. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay psyched.